Iowa grows writers almost as well as we grow corn. Today, we'll focus on Iowa City, the state's literary hotspot. It's Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowa City has long been known throughout the literary world for the University of Iowa Writers' Workshop. 2 years ago, the city was declared a city of literature by the United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, one of only three cities of literature in the world. And this weekend, Iowa City is celebrating its literary status with the second annual Iowa City Book Festival presented by the University of Iowa Libraries. Today, we'll talk about what it means to be a city of literature, what the festival holds for book lovers and their families, and we'll also talk about ways to get kids, particularly boys, interested in reading. But first, this news. This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. 2 years ago, Iowa City was named a City of Literature by the United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, or UNESCO, one of only three cities of literature in the world. And this weekend, Iowa City is celebrating the book with the second annual Iowa City Book Festival presented by the University of Iowa Libraries. With me this morning are Jeanette Pylak, the Executive Director of the Iowa City of Literature. Hello, Jeanette.
Good morning. Thank you, Charity.
And also with me is Christy Bontrager, who's co-director of the Iowa City Book Festival. Hi, Christy.
Hi, good morning.
We'd love for you to join us as well with your questions and also to let us know how your community celebrates reading. I know there are many wonderful libraries, many wonderful librarians out there inspiring kids and other people to read this summer. So you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jeanette, I want to start with you. First of all, we hear this name, the City of Literature, but what does it mean to be a city of literature?
Well, UNESCO has decided that there are several things happening in the world that makes it important to focus on cities and their cultural heritage. For example, most of the world's population now lives in cities. More than 50% of the world's population lives in cities. And as there is such a transition in the makeup of cities, they wanted to make sure that the cities didn't lose their sense of place and their cultural heritage. So they have identified seven categories to recognize cities. Cities of literature we've heard of already. There are cities of gastronomy, film, music, architecture, design, new media, etc. And the goal is to make sure that these cities retain their heritage in a time of great transition, recognizing cities are also economic developers. And with technology changing all of our lives, how do we make sure we don't lose where we've come from, and how do we make sure we bring it all together with technology going into the future? So probably the most exciting thing for me in coming to Iowa City is learning that when UNESCO heard that Iowa City's intention to apply to become a city of literature, their response was, "We've been waiting."
How long has the program been going on?
So the designation happened in the year 2008. And the University of Iowa came together with Iowa City, the City of Coralville, the City of North Liberty, Johnson County, the Convention and Visitor Bureau, and the Iowa City Area Chamber of Commerce. And since 2008 designation, those entities have come together to form their own private nonprofit, the Iowa City UNESCO City of Literature. They have funded that nonprofit for 3 years, so making a very significant investment in a down economic time, realizing that literature, reading, writing, and literacy is critical to where we go in the future. So we got the designation from our literary heritage, mostly the programs at the university, but in addition, our wonderful libraries, the wonderful publishers that are here in the area, the emerging writers that are here in the area, the book arts and the Center for the Book that's here. So we really are celebrating everybody in every form and fashion that's here. And let us not forget our bookstores and bookshops.
So you are the executive director of the City of Literature. What do you do?
Well, you know, I've been here for exactly 3 months, so organizing the board to look at our strategic plan, making the application to UNESCO is really looking back at what has happened in the past. But really, that literary heritage is only one-third of what we are about. The other portion is our contemporary vibrant scene. What are the publishers doing nowadays? What are the bookstores doing nowadays? What are the book arts people doing nowadays? And then creating the vision for the future. So we're working on our strategic plan. And in the 3 months that I've been here, I've joined the forces of the wonderful Iowa City Book Festival to see how we can make this festival just reach everybody in our community and eventually reach everybody in the region so that they can come and celebrate the arts of the books at every level, whether you're a casual journal keeper at home or you are an aspiring writer or publisher. We want you to come in and participate and have really authentic, engaged experience, understanding and living the literary culture here.
Now, the other two cities of literature in the world are Edinburgh, Scotland, and Melbourne, Australia. Have you been in communication with people in those cities to talk about what they've done with this title?
Definitely. We are being mentored by those cities because they came before us, and we are in the process of mentoring the other aspirant cities who are coming along. The next two in line who have made their applications are the city of Dublin, Ireland, and the city of Calcutta, India. And so it is our job to learn from those who have come before us and to help mentor those who are coming with coming along in the pipeline. There are 23 cities in the UNESCO Creative Cities Network, and we regularly communicate with each other through phone and virtual conferences and chat rooms so that we're constantly learning from each other. There is a conference every year. This year's will be in China. And the Iowa City, UNESCO City of Literature, has been asked to do a workshop on our upcoming University of Iowa iPhone application that is an application on which you can experience all of the literary assets of the university on your iPhone.
Give me an example of how that would work.
You could walk down the street and be in front of George's Tavern, and you could click on your iPhone, and you could find out who hung out there, who had a fist fight there, who learned that they won the Pulitzer Prize when they were sitting inside there. In addition, you could go to each one of those individual writers' biographies, their lectures that they have, video, audio, photographs, any one of those literary assets that exists in the libraries and the university's collections will be reachable through your iPhone application. So it's not just a literary walking tour, it's a literary library in your handheld device.
Well, I want to turn to Christy Bontrager now. Again, you're co-director of the Iowa City Book Festival. This is the second year of the book festival. Was the festival in any way inspired by the fact that Iowa City had just become a city of literature?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we looked at is the other two cities of literature, Melbourne and Edinburgh, one of the things they have is a phenomenal book festival. And we looked around, being at the University of Iowa Libraries, and thought, how can we connect with the community? And when we look at this, that there was no book festival around, we thought, you know, that's something that maybe we can help do. During the flood of 2008, we had hundreds of people come to the University of Iowa, to the library specifically, and help us evacuate materials. And so we really felt like this was a nice way for us to thank people in the community who may never have been to the university library, maybe never thought they could even go inside.
Well, that does seem unusual. I've lived in a number of university towns, and it's unusual for the university library to reach out to the community in this way. What is your relationship like with the city of Iowa City?
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of, there's a lot of overlap, a lot of work that we do together. For example, when we talk about how we reach out to the community, we're the largest library in the state of Iowa. We do an enormous amount of interlibrary loan all over the state, especially through the health sciences. We work a lot with physicians and nurses all over the state. Here locally, we also do a number of programming things back and forth with Iowa City Public Library. And, you know, a lot of our students, you know, they go there to study sometimes, and we have resources down in our library that community people can use. We make sure that our collections don't overlap too much. Like, for example, we let the public library, you know, their main constituents are, you know, families, and they do all the collection for the people to serve there. We do collection on much more academic topics. And so if you're a member of the community in Iowa City and you have an information need, you have a resource that you can go to. It can be at the University of Iowa, but it can also be at the Iowa City Public Library. So for any type of information need that you'll have. I have to say, Susan Craig and her staff at the Iowa City Public Library this year they've really jumped on board with the book festival and helped us. They're doing, Deb Green, the children's librarian, is doing basically all the children's programming, because at an academic library, we don't have a lot of children who wander in.
only being carried in a sling by a graduate student.
Exactly.
Well, we're going to go to a break here in just a couple of minutes, but let's talk first about the kickoff event of the festival, which is coming up, Friday night?
Yes.
And this is the author's dinner.
Yes. Friday night is our author dinner. And so many of the authors who are going to be participating in the festival are coming to dinner, and they'll be seated all over. We're having tables set up in the main library in the North Exhibition Hall. So yes, we are having food in the library.
This time only.
No. This time for sure.
But no gum, right?
Yeah, right. And Jane Smiley is going to be our keynote speaker. We asked Jane Smiley to come and join us because we wanted this dinner to be a celebration of Nancy Baker, who's the university librarian. Her 10th anniversary is this year at the University of Iowa. And so I want to say that last fall, I asked Nancy to put together a list of authors that she would like to attend the book festival, and Jane Smiley was one of those. And so we thought this would be perfect to have Jane Smiley come and do the keynote presentation for this dinner honoring Nancy and her 10th anniversary.
So Jane's going to do the talking most of the evening, but the authors will be scattered throughout the room. So people who go to the dinner will get a chance to sit with whomever they choose?
Exactly. We're not doing assigned seating. We'll have a map with all of the authors where they're going to be sitting. And so you can come and we're going to have a cocktail reception beforehand, and then you can just choose where you want to sit.
All right. Yeah. Well, that sounds exciting. We're going to talk more about the Iowa City Book Festival. We're also going to talk about the Day in the City of Literature, which is part of the festival. I'm talking with Christy Bontrager, who is co-director of the Iowa City Book Festival. And also with us today, Jeanette Pilak, who is executive director of the Iowa City of Literature. A little later on the show, we're going to be talking to author John Coy about getting kids engaged with literature, particularly boys engaged with reading. And we'd love to hear from you as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send us an email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at IPRTalk. Let us know how you celebrate books in your community. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and this hour we're talking about literature in Iowa City. Iowa City is one of three cities of literature as designated by UNESCO in the entire world. And this weekend, Iowa City is holding its second annual Iowa City Book Festival, which is presented by the University of Iowa Libraries. I'm talking this morning with Christy Bontrager, who is co-director of the Iowa City Book Festival, and Jeanette Pilak, who is executive director of the Iowa City of Literature office. And Christy, we were just talking about the kickoff of the festival Friday night with an author's dinner. And then what comes after that? What will happen throughout the city on Saturday?
Sure. Saturday is our big festival day. That's kind of what I'm calling it. We have invited booksellers and other vendors who are coming to Gibson Square, which is the green space outside of the University of Iowa main library that's between Burlington Street and the library. It's a fantastic location. There's wonderful trees there. And so we'll have booksellers there. We'll have a music tent there and have music all afternoon. We'll have the Center for the Book is coming and doing a tent of wonderful hands-on activities. So do letterpress printing. You'll learn how to marble paper. You'll do some calligraphy. I mean, It was a really popular tent last year, and they're going to have even more activities this year. We were able to get a grant from the Iowa City or from the Iowa Arts Council to support that tent. Then we have a ton of fantastic children's programming that I was mentioning earlier with Deb Green has been organizing. We'll have some celebrities. For example, Clifford the Big Red Dog is coming, and Curious George will be there. So, and all kinds of stuff for kids all day outside. Then inside, we have programs and readings all day long, different discussions. So Audrey Niffenegger, who is her most recent novel is Her Fearful Symmetry, but she's also the author of The Time Traveler's Wife. She's going to kick off our Shamba author series. And then Jane Smiley is going to do a reading of her most recent novel, Private Life. We've got David Rhodes. He wrote Driftless, which is this year's All Iowa Reads selection. It's a fantastic book, and I think it's going to be a really fun program. Jeffrey Zaslow, who wrote The Girls from Ames, is coming, and a couple of the girls are coming as well, so that'll be fun. And then we're going to finish up with our author series with James Galvin. He is a poet and a faculty member of the Iowa Writers' Workshop.
Well, and I want to talk about this day in the city of literature. And Jeanette, I want you to chime in as well. What is the day in the city of literature?
Sure. The day is actually Sunday. And that's how we wanted to expand the book festival. And how do you, you know, what does city of literature mean and how can we, you know, utilize that? So we figured that we could maybe do some programming in businesses throughout the city of literature, maybe see writers in their natural habitats.
So, thing here, Charity, is what's so exciting is that so many of these businesses, there's more than 20 of the businesses who had ideas and saw themselves as being connected to the city of literature in ways that you might not think of as you're walking down the street. But for instance, an optical store, what do they have related to the city of literature? Well, how about a sale on reading glasses? You know, dress shops that, what is their connection to a city of literature? Well, if there's a mural on the outside of the dress shop, as there is at Dulcinea, and that mural happens to have literary features in it, you could win a $200 gift certificate for naming those literary aspects in that mural. So what's really exciting is that we are seeing that everybody in Iowa City and Corville and North Liberty see themselves connected to this UNESCO designation in a variety of ways and wanting to be a part of it and celebrate it. And that is really what we call creative tourism, the ability to offer any visitor an engaging, authentic experience with the people who live and work here.
Mm-hmm. So I want both of you to tell me, and Christy, you can go first. So if you were coming to Iowa City for the book festival, and there are all these things going on in the day of the city, in the city of literature, what would your path be? Where would you go?
Well, on Sunday, a couple programs that I'm particularly interested in are going to happen at Active Endeavors. Elizabeth Hill is going to read from her book that she wrote about hiking in Iowa. And then later in the day, James McKean is going to read from his book called Homestand. And he talks about his life in athletics and being a basketball player at a major Division I college. That's personally interesting to me. So I would start there. But then, you know, there's a group of young writers. They are poets and nonfiction writers and fiction writers that are called the Anthology Series. And we're going to have them. They're splitting up and doing two readings. One of them is going to be at Teaspoons, that's on Market Street, and they do really short readings. So they do like 3 to 5 minutes each. And then the second set of them is going to do a reading at Beatology, Iowa, on Washington Street later in the afternoon. So I think those two would be really interesting as well.
How about you, Jeanette? What if you were just coming to Iowa City for the day, what would you want to do?
Well, I'm going to start on Saturday in my day, and I'm going to make sure that I carve out time to go to the Adaptation Film Festival. And this is a discussion that talks about how we get our literature to the big screen. And it can, and that process can happen in a variety of ways, be it from a book, a graphic novel, or a screenplay to getting it on screen. And we have some wonderful directors, and writers, of movies, so The Road to Perdition, The Field of Dreams, and help me out here.
Elegy.
Elegy,
yes.
As well. And I love seeing movies after I've read the book. So now I want to listen to the people who made that transition happen on Saturday. And then a personal favorite of mine, a poet and a professor from the University of Iowa's English Department in Nonfiction Writing, Stephen Cusisto, and his guide dog, Nira, will be in the North Hall of the library at 3 p.m. And Stephen is a poet and has written a book, a memoir called Planet of the Blind. But Stephen will be selling books of poetry. And earlier, I will make sure that I've gone to Poetry 101 so I can understand poetry. And then I'll go see Stephen, because he's selling his poetry books for $5 each. And the funds he raised, he's going to contribute to Guiding Eyes for the Blind, the program that trains guide dogs. And everybody will get to meet his famous guide dog, Nira. Then on Sunday, you know, I'm just going to bounce around and see as many different things as I can. Haunted Bookshop has programs for children. Murphy Brookfield Books has the typography and printmaking history going on. And then, you know, at the end of the day, Devotee has a restaurant has made the Iowa City Book Festival their charity for that night, and all the funds that they raised, the proceeds that night, will go to the book festival. So I'm going to finish with a delicious meal at Devotee.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful weekend ahead. Mm-hmm. If you want to find out all about the events going on at the Iowa City Book Festival, of course, you can go to the website, which is iowacitybookfestival.org. You can find the complete schedule of all of the author events and all of the other events going on throughout the weekend there. And we'd love for you to join our conversation today as well. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're going to talk about how to get kids engaged in reading, which is a conversation we were just having spontaneously in the office this morning. A number of us have small kids that we want to focus on books. If you'd like to ask some questions, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can join us through email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jeanette, before I say goodbye to you, I want to ask you about the future of Iowa City as City of the Book. What do you see happening in the next year or so to celebrate that heritage?
You know, I think that we will be continuing to look at what are the best practices for reading. We've started this year taking the Hawkeye football readers into elementary schools in Iowa. When we can see how that program works with the student athletes' fall football schedule, we'll know how broadly we can expand that to the entire cultural corridor. We've had emails from teachers in Cedar Rapids and Swisher and other places in the region that are looking, how can we replicate that program elsewhere? And how can we work with other colleges and universities to replicate that program so student leaders are mentors in their communities in the areas of literacy, reading, writing, and staying in school? Additionally, we'll be looking at how can we grow the sponsorships and the activities of the Iowa City Book Festival so that we can be drawing readers, writers, and audiences from Minnesota, Wisconsin, Missouri, Kansas. I got a call yesterday from a gentleman who was coming from Grand Rapids, Michigan. So we want to grow this festival.
Well, Jeanette, thank you so much for joining us today. Jeanette Pylak, the Executive Director of the Iowa City of Literature. We'll continue our conversation with Christy Bontrager, Co-Director of the Iowa City Book Festival, in just a moment. And we would like to hear from you. How have you gotten your kids excited about literature? 866-780-9100 or at IPR Talk. This is Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking with Christy Bontrager, who is co-director of the Iowa City Book Festival today. We've been talking about Iowa City being a city of literature and the book festival that's coming up this weekend. And now joining us is John Coy. He's one of the authors who will be at the festival this weekend. He is also the resident author at the Iowa City Public Library, and that will take place in conjunction with the festival. He is the author of a number of picture books and chapter books for young people. His most recent work is Eyes on the Goal, which is a book focusing on adventures at soccer camp. This is the second book in his 4 for 4 series following Top of the Order. John, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Charity. My pleasure.
I hope you'll join the conversation as well. We'd love to know how you've gotten your kids turned on to reading. Maybe you've had a little trouble with that and you'd like to ask some questions about ways to inspire your kids to read. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. That's 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. John, first tell us what this author in residence at the Iowa City Library involves for you.
Well, it's just an amazing program. Deb Green, the Children's Services Coordinator, has provided a program where kids of all ages are going to find something that's interesting for them. And it's one of the advantages I feel I have, because I write picture books for young children and then chapter books and then as well as young adult novels. So I'm going to meet with kids of all ages over the days Thursday and Friday, and I'm really impressed with this type of program, and I'm also thrilled to be coming to Iowa City.
So what kind of programs will you be doing with the kids?
We're going to start with a preschool story time on Thursday. This is for the younger kids. That's going to start at Thursday in the morning, and then we've got one where we're going to do a summer reading program where we're just going to encourage kids to come in, and I'll be there, and they're going to have some athletes from the university there as well. I'm also going to do a program for adults on Thursday evening, and that's we're going to talk specifically about boys and reading. A lot of parents are concerned about why some of their girls are reading and some of their boys are not. And we'll talk some about some of the reasons that gap has developed, and also some things parents can do to provide ways for boys to get more excited about reading. I'm also going to do some stuff where I'm going to meet with teens. We're going to do that on Friday. That's Friday afternoon from 2 to 3. And on Friday, they're also going to have a pizza party at noon at the library, and people are invited to come. And we'll talk a little bit about this this 4 for 4 series and Eyes on the Goal. But the best part of that will be getting to eat pizza.
Well, I think you're in touch with your audience on that front. So why has a gap developed between boys and girls in reading?
I think it's really interesting to look. If you look at numbers historically, it's not that the boys have dropped off a cliff. If you go back and look at numbers, the rate of reading with boys has maintained at a fairly steady level. What's changed is the girls are doing much better. And so the gap has come about not because boys are doing worse. You know, many of us can remember back to our middle school or high school years that there were boys who weren't that excited about reading. But what's changed is girls are really thriving with this, and that's where the gap is coming from. So in order to keep up with those girls, boys need to be reading at a higher rate than they have in the past. And for a lot of them, that's not happening.
Why do you think the girls have sprung ahead in that way?
I think all the work that was done, 20, 30 years ago to provide opportunities for girls has borne fruit. And I think if you're a 10-year-old girl, there are all kinds of models around. There are all kinds of people telling you, hey, you can do whatever you want. You can be smart. You can be confident. You can be talented. Go. I think that's a bit more confusing for boys. I think the message boys are getting is a little bit more confusing. And oftentimes, the people giving boys the message that reading is important are female, and I don't think boys are hearing enough from men, from their fathers, from their uncles, from their coaches, that, hey, if you want to have opportunities in this economy now, you need to have strong reading skills. Imagine what it's going to be like 10 or 15 years out.
Now, I know that when Harry Potter burst onto the scene, what about 12 years ago, that really changed reading for a lot of kids and got a lot of kids involved in reading and became a springboard for them to get into other literature, other chapter books, other real literature for kids. But, Harry, he's a boy. Was there a divide there? Or were we leaving boys behind there somehow?
No, that was a book that was very popular with both boys and girls. But I think it's important to realize what an unusual book that was. And often books have an appeal more strongly to girls or boys. And, you know, that Harry Potter book was a phenomenon. We may never see the likes of that again. We may never see people lining up at stores at midnight in those kinds of lines to buy a book. And we need, you know, we need books every year on an ongoing basis that pull boys in, not just something that comes around, you know, once in a lifetime.
If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Do you have a boy who's a voracious reader? What do you think spurred that? Do you have a boy who's a reluctant reader? Let us know. And you can ask some questions of John about how you may try to get your son or your daughter excited about reading. 866-780-9100. I'm talking with author John Coy, and also Christy Bontraker, co-director of the Iowa City Book Festival, is here. John, when you look at the shelves at the library, do you think that books that are more attractive to girls are now overrepresented in the modern publishing industry?
I think if you're a girl, you have more to choose from. And I think that, you know, I think that the one of the reasons that this occurs is that a lot of people who are making the decisions on what books, first of all, what books get published, and then second of all, what books get chosen, you know, are female. You know, I've been doing this many years now, and I've never worked with a male editor. And I've had the experience of sending books off that I knew were things that would be interesting to the boys I was seeing in school, and have publishers say, I'm really not that interested in books about, and then the editor said, sports. And I thought, wow, that's a lot of kids who are interested in that. And this editor was just being honest. She was just saying, I really am not interested in that. And, you know, to me, that's kind of remarkable. I don't know what area that kids are as interested in that an editor would feel comfortable saying, I'm not interested in that. So I think there are a number of, you know, I think there are a number of steps along the road, all the way from submitting a manuscript to the people who buy books. You know, most of the people, if you spend time in a bookstore, in a children's bookstore in particular, most of the people who come in to make decisions about, you know, books to purchase are women. And so I really think we have a situation where, you know, men are not showing up in this area in the numbers that are necessary to give boys the message that, hey, this is really important.
Diane is on the line from Vinton. Hello, Diane.
Hi.
What would you like to talk about?
Well, you're talking about how Harry Potter got boys into reading. I think you need to go back a few steps and give some credit to R.L. Stein and the whole Goosebumps series, because that got a lot of boys into reading at an elementary level where they were kind of tapering off reading. So
I think that's right, Diane, and I think it also brings up the point that, you know, frequently some of the books that are exciting to boys are books that sometimes are not considered as good as what they should be reading about. I think all of us tend to have a hierarchy of good reading in our mind, and if you look at what's at the bottom of that hierarchy, and, you know, if it's, you know, All-Star Wrestling magazines and Captain Underpants and Batman comic books, and then you realize, oh, most of this stuff that's at the bottom is stuff that's popular with boys, you know, if you include Goosebumps or something like that. Boys get this message. They get this message in school that, hey, you should really be reading something better. You know, here's To Kill a Mockingbird. You'll love To Kill a Mockingbird. And some boys who don't, they get the message that what they like to read isn't good enough. And I think it's a real way where we have to be careful about broadening, you know, what we talk about as reading, rather than just saying, you know, classic novels, that's what's good reading, and that's what you should like if you're a strong reader.
And do you think that kids get the same thing out of reading no matter what they're reading?
I don't think they get the same thing, but I think, you know, I think we need to recognize that different kids want to read different things. And, you know, we've got some boys who go through a period where they just love reading nonfiction. They love reading books about sharks that are frequently titled sharks. And, you know, sometimes with those boys, we try and steer them quickly to something better. But I think there's a balance involved. I think if we don't let them read some of what they like, we can unwittingly give them the message that what you're reading, that's not real reading.
Right, and real reading is actually boring.
Yeah, and you know, I get letters all the time, letters and emails from kids who say, I don't like to read, but I really liked Crackback. And it's amazing to me because here a kid is taking the time to write me a letter or an email to tell me that they read a book I wrote and they liked it, but they still feel like they need to start the letter by saying, I don't like to read. And I think what they mean is, I don't like to read some of the books that I'm told I should read. But I think we need to really broaden our definition of reading to include those kids, because my concern is so many kids, if you ask, you know, fifth graders or middle school kids, how do you feel about reading, so many kids identify themselves as, I don't like to read or I hate reading. And there's something puzzling there, because these kids are actually doing quite a bit of reading. They're spending a lot of time online. They're texting back and forth with their friends. You know, what is texting other than reading and writing fast? So I think in some ways, part of what we need to do is really broaden our definition of reading to include more of the kids who are identifying themselves as non-readers.
Diane, thank you for your call. We have Mindy on the line from Iowa City. Hi, Mindy.
Hi. I'd like to talk about boys and encouraging them to read. My nephew is a voracious reader, and I think modeling that, you know, seeing his parents reading was very important. But also my brother made a point of taking newspaper articles and magazine clippings and things he came across through his day that could be local news or planetary happenings or oddities, just anything that could, you know, trigger some interest. And he would take this home at the end of the day and sit down with his kids and share them. And I think seeing that made that newspaper or magazine seem more interesting.
Mindy, I think that's just an excellent point, and I think one of the things that's happened with the changes in the newspaper business is that's a way where a lot of boys used to see their fathers reading, you know, whether it was the sports section or looking through the news. And now with fewer people getting a paper at home, some boys don't see their dads reading as much. And I think you're right. I think that's just a wonderful example of what a father can do to instill a love of reading in a child.
Thank you for your call, Mindy. And Christy, as you were putting together the Iowa City Book Festival, what did you think about in trying to get kids engaged in the festival?
Well, we knew for sure that we wanted to have children's activities at the festival. So we do have programming for little kids, but one of the other programs that I'm really excited about is in our Poets on the Patio program. We've invited students from the Iowa Young Writers Studio and students from the program, the International Writing Programs Between the Lines, and they're going to be reading their own work on Saturday afternoon in the Poets on the Patio. And I think that getting the students involved in reading their own stuff is really exciting. It kind of gives them a level of importance that maybe they don't always see or feel with their reading or their writing.
It's real writing, not just something they're doing in their notebook.
Exactly. And people are going to come and see them and hear them read. One of the other programs we're doing on the Poetry on the Patio is we've invited John Emmett Mahan. He is the winner of this year's Poetry Out Loud contest. And he's a high school student from Sioux City, Iowa, who's coming over, and he's going to recite some of his favorite poems. And so I think seeing, you know, a high school kid up there reading poetry is going to be kind of cool for some of the, you know, the younger preteen kids.
James is on the line now in Des Moines. Hello, James.
Hello.
What would you like to talk about?
I wanted to call in about the subject of boys reading and things like that. I was a voracious reader when I was young, and there was a number of reasons for it. My parents modeled it very, very well, both my mother and my father. And also, other readers have mentioned this, is that comic books were a big thing for me. And it goes back to the whole about expanding what we think of good reading, because both things like comic books, and I was big into role-playing games like Dungeons and Dragons and things like that, those are ways to read actually a very high-quality and well-written material in a way that you are not really aware that you're reading, that you're actually sitting down and trying to read something. It's all just fun. So that was one of the big things for me about becoming a really, really good reader.
And did your parents encourage you to read all kinds of things, or did you find that they tried to steer you to the better, quote, better literature as well?
They really did both. When they saw that I had an affinity for, you know, fantasy and science fiction stuff, they certainly supported that. But they also introduced me to some of the classics. Some of the first you know, like real literature I read was some stuff by Alexandre Dumas, The Three Musketeers and The Man in Iron Mask, because they said that would be the closest to what I was reading already. And it really is. It's swashbuckling, it's high action, things like that. But it also gets you into that style of writing and that form of writing.
Well, James, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
And, you know, John, that actually brings me to something that we were talking about just in my family over the weekend, the fact that some of the classic literature that you look at, one that came up in particular is James Fenimore Cooper's Last of the Mohicans. And that is an exciting story, but it's written in very passive language. So my brother actually characterized it as one of the most exciting stories in literature written in the most boring way possible. Why don't we try to steer kids to these books that we consider to be classics and that we remember as being exciting? Is that something that we run into quite a bit?
Well, I think so. And I think James' story is so lovely because, you know, he gave such an articulate plug for comic books. And I think sometimes, maybe more so with boys than girls, we worry that boys are just going to stay, you know, like they're just going to be reading, you know, comic books or Captain Underpants forever, rather than trusting that, no, this is something they're enjoying now, but that they will read other things as well. And I think that is something we have to be a little careful with books of our, you know, our childhood. Technology's changed dramatically. Language has changed. And something that we thought was, just incredibly great story, depending on the kid, the kid might not have that same reaction. And so I think it's really, it's really a question of determining what a particular child is interested in and helping that child find those things. And then, you know, providing things that, you know, you think they will also be interested in. With that Last of Mohicans, it's always possible to watch that movie, too, with Daniel Day-Lewis running around and screaming.
Which is awfully, awfully exciting. Christy, you looked like you wanted to jump in there.
Well, I love it that we came back to the movie, the adaptation, because actually one of the things our goals is with the book festival is to make literature and reading accessible to all kinds of people. And that's why we're doing the adaptation film festival, because I think that's a way that a lot of people get into literature and get into stories and stuff. They actually go see the movie. And
it's a gateway.
It's a gateway. And I think that's okay to do it.
Well, that brings me to another concern that I know I have as a parent and a lot of parents have, is that, you know, our kids do see so much on the screen. And my kids are little, so I can control that a little bit. But as they go out into the world, you know, their friends will have video games and the Disney Channel and all of these other distractions. John, do you feel like in a way reading is endangered because of all of these distractions?
Charity, I think it's a really interesting question. I think I'm going back to that idea of broadening our definition of reading. I think sometimes you see people with the earbuds in, and there's a tendency to think, well, they're listening to music. Sometimes what they're doing is they're listening to books. And, you know, now that's a different type of experience with the story than reading the story. But I think one of the things that's heartening to me is I think that the love of story is as strong as it ever has been, if not stronger. There's just more ways now for young people to get stories. And I think books will continue to be a part of that. But I also think we have to respect that, you know, this is a generation that's grown up on video. They know more about movies. If you talk to kids in their 20s, they know their movies inside out. And they know it, you know, by actors, by directors. And I think we have to continue to, you know, we have to continue to provide books for them that are interesting, that are exciting, and reflect their own lives so that they will continue to use that part of their brain and get their stories that way as well.
With just a moment left, John, can you give parents just one piece of advice? If somebody has a struggling reader, what's the one thing that you always make sure to tell them?
I say find out what that child is interested in, and then go with that child, you know, either to the library or a bookstore, and find a book or, you know, a magazine about that subject. Sometimes kids won't even think of it as reading if they're so into something. It'll just be, oh, that's basketball. I love basketball. I'm interested in basketball. So I say really find out what the genuine interests of the child are, and there will be books and magazines for that interest.
John, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Charity. It's been fun.
John Coy is one of the authors who will be at the Iowa City Book Festival this weekend. He's also the resident author at the Iowa City Public Library and author of many books for young people. His most recent work is in the 4 for 4 series. Top of the Order and Eyes on the Goal are the first two books in that series. And Christy, before I let you go, what is the one thing you're most excited about at the festival this weekend?
I'm most excited about having good weather. So everyone out there, please cross your fingers. We're going to have good weather. But actually, just getting a bunch of people together to do reading and writing and making books, I think that's going to be super fun.
Christy, thank you so much. Christy Bontrager is the co-director of the Iowa City Book Festival. You can find out all about the festival on the website, iowacitybookfestival.org. And Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Today's show produced by Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. I'm Charity Nebbe. You can join us tomorrow at 10 o'clock for Politics Day on Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.